Hey guys, I'm your host Danielle, and you're listening to The Eavesdrop, where we talk about life, love, and all things taboo on kpcradio.com. On today's show, we'll be discussing some of the challenges and advantages regarding being openly gay. Today we have Cameron, president of Pierce College's Gay Straight Alliance and a member of the LGBT Club on Pierce College campus. Hi, Cameron. Thank you for coming on today.
Hello. It's really nice to be here today, too.
Pleasure to have you.
Pleasure is mine as well.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am 23 years old. I am a costume designer for, that's my major, is costume design. I actually got married this year in January. Man, I mix those 2 days up. January, not June. January. And a lot of the things I do around campus is I do a lot of social justice work. So I do presentations in professors' classrooms. I make speeches about being LGBT and what it's like being LGBT and how to be a good ally, because that's one of my main focuses, is how to be a good ally, because people who are on the LGBT might know mostly information, but people who aren't as aware but still are looking for help, and I'm more than willing to be there and be like, okay, this is something you might need to know.
So, what is the Gay Straight Alliance?
The Gay Straight Alliance is the GSA is a LGBT club. It's supposed to be a social advocacy group that works for the rights of LGBT students as well as any other minority group that's on campus. So we do also fight for feminist rights, and we also fight for minority rights like Black student rights and Latino student rights and Asian Pacific Islander student rights. We're just, our focus is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, asexual, and such. But we do try to help anyone else out that we can. Our focus, though, as a club, is to educate the campus on LGBT right issues. So, like, right now, one of the biggest issues is trans rights that's coming up, and we're trying to really educate the campus on how to handle a trans student, how to be accepting, how to ask questions and not be offensive, how to be, like, okay, respectful to another person.
So, as president, like, how did you get that position? How did you become president?
I originally was vice president, and the president couldn't actually run for the second time, and I was like, oh, I could take up the mantle, and I took up the mantle. And I remember my first time as president, I had a lot of guest speakers come in talking about LGBT rights issues. We had my first semester as president, I think it was autism awareness, and so we had a student make a presentation each club meeting for that month about autism and how to be aware of it. And I brought in a guest speaker who was a special education assistant, talk about how autistic children are and how to deal with that kind of adversity and how to handle that kind of education path. And another thing I did is I brought in a friend who was in theater, who was a active LGBT member in like the 60s, and talked to the students about how it was like growing up being gay in that time period and how hard it was and how they had so many workarounds to try to avoid being caught by the cops for being gay. So I kind of like try to bring those perspectives in. I know last semester I invited Richard Follett, an old professor from this campus, retired, was an English teacher and also did the Bible studies, and he did a presentation on spirituality in the LGBT. So I try to be more inclusive and go into subject matters that aren't as well discussed.
So I know you said you, right now you guys are trying to focus on trans rights. Do you know, like, is Pierce gonna, because I know a law recently passed where we can have gender neutral restrooms. So do you know if Pierce is gonna have that?
Yes, actually, before the law was passed, I wrote a petition based off a petition that was given to CSUN for gender neutral bathrooms, and I got about, like, in the first day, 80 signatures or so. And I brought it to the facilities advisory committee, and I was like, we have a need for this kind of facilities. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So they adopted it pretty quickly. I thought they're going to fight us. Instead, they actually were like coming up with ways of selling it to people who'd be more against it, saying, well, we could use it for disabled bathrooms because blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, cool. So their idea was for the next buildings that are built, they'd implement these gender neutral bathrooms. And this was the plan for quite some... After that, that was the plan for every new building construction until California passed the new law. Was it federal? I think... I don't remember which state, what level it was on. Passed the law, which required that every gender-neutral bath... Every unisex bathroom be available to students. So we were like, oh, okay, well, I guess, well, we took the initiative, but California beat us to the punch. But Pierce's goal is to actually have it. So hopefully by next semester, we should have some gender-neutral bathrooms on campus. We have some, but they're under lock and key right now.
Mm. And then with the gender-neutral bathrooms, will that eliminate the men and women, or will it be men, women, and a gender-neutral?
What would be there'd be a men's bathroom, a women's bathroom, and there'd be a gender-neutral bathroom, because getting rid of the gendered bathrooms is another battle for not right now. I mean, it's something that would be not a bad idea, because, like, Europe doesn't, some countries in Europe don't have gendered bathrooms, and there really hasn't been any incidences. I mean, the thing, the misconception is, oh, so it's a woman's bathroom, so men aren't going to sneak in. It's like, if somebody has the intent for ill will to do something in the bathroom, the gender sign isn't going to stop them or deter them. The fact that it's illegal isn't going to stop them and deter them. So, like, putting down these harsh bathroom laws isn't going to stop or deter anyone. It's just going to hurt people who are trying to use the facilities for going to the restroom.
So for those that don't know, would you be able to explain, like, what is it to be bisexual, transsexual, transgender? Those mean?
So bisexual generally refers to attraction to same and other. While the term is somewhat argued, it can mean, let's say me, for example. I'm not bisexual, but saying if I was, it'd mean I could be attracted to men and women, or trans women and trans men. It just means that I am not just purely attracted to one gender. I'm attracted to multiple. It's debated the difference between bisexual and pansexual, as pansexual is attracted to feature, not gender characteristics. Now, when we're talking about transgender, it's generally somebody whose gender identity does not align with their biological sex. So let's go, for example, a transgender woman would be born biologically male but identifies as a woman. Henceforth, they're a trans woman. And it goes for a trans man, born biologically female, identify as male. And agendered is born biologically male or female but do not identify as either. And gender fluid is more or less where you don't always fit in one gender norm. You might identify as your assigned at birth gender, but you might fluctuate depending on scenario of how you're biologically feeling, because gender fluids are very complicated to explain, but it's kind of going off the concept of, like, liquid in a water bottle, where it takes the shape of where it is and isn't a solid object, isn't a solid concept, because gender isn't inherently a solid concept. We gave it a concept, but it by itself, we societally conditioned what we consider gender to be. And so that's one of the biggest problems when you're dealing with gender and masculinity and femininity, is a lot of it is just societal concept of what is considered masculine. Because what might be considered masculine in one culture may be considered feminine in another culture. So some cultures view certain acts as very effeminate, while others view it very masculine. So you're constantly having to deal with that as being trans or being LGBT, as being in that crossroad of what the culture currently considers masculine and feminine behavior.
What is it called when a person they don't really identify with anything, like when they don't, when they're not either sexually attracted to, you know.
Yeah, like, okay. When you have no sexual attraction to other human beings, it's called asexual. While asexual can have relationships, they generally lack the sexual component. So they may have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, but there is no sexual driven aspects to their relationships. It's a lack of sex or any desire to have sex. The flip turn of it is aromantic, which is lack there of commitment, like love. While they may have physical desires, they don't want to pursue them beyond the physical, because they don't want to have, that's not who they are. It's hard to explain aromantic. Asexual is a lot easier to explain, because it's pretty straightforward. No sexual attraction towards anyone. Well, aromantic is no romantic attraction towards anyone.
And what are the proper pronouns that should be used by others addressing, like, transgender, or, like, what are the proper pronouns to not offend anyone?
So one of the biggest things to do is, if you see someone and you're like, I can't identify their gender, then you go, hey, excuse me, I don't mean to be rude and I don't mean to offend, but what are your pronouns? You come off like a, hey, I'm trying to respect you kind of angle, so you're not coming at, because the problem is if you go, oh, it looks like a dude, I'll just call him a dude. It's not what they identify as. Crub. Yeah, you're like, yeah, so generally, if someone is trans and they're a trans woman, you call her, she, her, hers kind of pronouns. If they're a trans man, he, him, his. If they're agendered, they, them, theirs. Now, there are other terms like ze, zer, zem, but don't use those pronouns unless someone tells you to. Because pronouns are how they identify themselves, and if you pull a pronoun they don't identify with, it's kind of like mispronouncing someone who is cisgendered, which is cisgender is gender identity and your biological sex line up. It's kind of like two L's lining up straight together.
So if you address someone with the wrong pronouns, does that make them feel like you're not respecting them in their choice?
Well, when you use the wrong pronouns, most of the time people do it by mistake, which is called, it's called a microaggression. It's not inherently a huge act of violence or anything. It's like when somebody makes a snide comment about, like, oh, you're pretty whatever for whatever. It's like, thanks, that was such a nice comment. That's totally what, yeah. So if you make that mistake, just apologize. Like, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do that. And, I mean, if they're upset, they're upset. But generally try to bring the message home that you did not mean for offense and that you apologize for the offense. But it's kind of difficult. But really, a lot of times, what it boils down to is always if you make that kind of mistake, go, oops, sorry, my bad, I'll try to fix that. Because most people aren't looking for a fight, and hunkering down on the fact you use the wrong pronouns isn't going to make the situation better. It's only going to make it worse. So I'd just be like, oh, oops, sorry.
So if you don't mind me asking, what is your sexual orientation?
I am gay.
Okay. So when did you first realize that you were gay?
Ooh, okay. I came out in high school. I was aware of it in middle school, but I pretended I wasn't and thought I was just weird and chalked it up to that. Like, oh, people don't like me. I'm just acting strange because I have no friends. That's it. No friends is why I'm acting weird around other guys. That explains everything. Yeah, no, that was not the case.
So what was it like when you first came out?
When I first came out, well, that was not that bad, actually. One of my more religious friends was really weird about it, and I kind of was like, I'm not surprised. You're, like, really religious. My other friends were like, cool. And then this girl that was a friend was like, ooh, so cute. And I'm like, oh, yay, this is going there.
Is there, like, do you ever have, like, that conflict with your friends or with others, like, on the religious side of it?
Occasionally, yes. More religious friends tend to be very not pro-gay, so you kind of just, like, it's like walking through a minefield when you're having a conversation with them, because it's just like, I don't want to argue with you right now about being gay. I know who I am. I don't want to argue if it's a choice or not, because it's not a choice. Nobody chooses, generally speaking, to be ostracized or bullied. So it's like, no, I am who I am. It's difficult at times. Other times, they just don't care, and they're like, oh, okay, we'll just move on.
Do you think that there's a sense of empowerment by actually coming out?
Definitely. It's in a realization of your identity as a person, because living in the closet sucks. It's not fun being afraid to admit to yourself that you're gay or bi or trans. It just sucks. It makes you feel uncomfortable. It makes you feel sad. You have depression problems because you can't be straightforward with who you are to other people. So it's just kind of its own trouble basket of sorts. I think for a lot of youth, coming out is one of the more difficult things, because a lot of them are in households where if they go, hey, mom, dad, I'm gay, they're like, okay, that's great. Now you live on the street. Bye. And that happens a lot. It's sad, but parents will just throw out their children because they're gay. It's like, I raised you for 13, 15 years. Yeah, I don't care now. You're gay. You're not my problem. It's like, you kind of made that person. You should take responsibility in that person. But that's like that's like a huge fear in the gay community, is when coming out is the level of rejection you'll receive. Because you'll get rejected. It's not a matter of, oh, no, no. It's a matter of when, who. not if. It is going to happen. Someone is going to reject you for your identity. And that's the hardest part, is you figuring out and finding out who that person is. Because it could be your best friend who suddenly is not your best friend, nor your friend anymore, or your mother or father who are no longer willing to take care of you. And that's the trickiest and saddest part.
For those that have come out and that have experienced the negative effects from either their friends or their family, is there a place that they can go?
It really depends. Here's the sad part. If it's like places like Utah, no, not really. They have the largest homeless LGBT population. It really depends, but the sad answer is not usually. There are areas that are trying to help, but it's very hard. You have to hunt on the streets for homeless gay youth, and that's not really a fruitful endeavor. And the reality is most of them who get kicked out of their homes turn to prostitution to make a living because they have no family to support them, so the only thing they can sell is themselves. And that's a slippery slope to mental health and physical health issues. Now, I know there are LGBT centers out there that particularly try to cater to foster LGBT youth, but it's, as I said, it's a very difficult road for when someone has been thrown out to actually put themselves together. But there are people who have managed to get through it. It's just, we don't have enough out there yet.
Are there any organizations that you know of, like, in the Valley?
I think Project Trevor tries to help in that situation. I'm not sure. I know there are some. I know Trevor is, like, one of them. Like, they have a suicide prevention hotline. But a lot of the times you have to know they exist, and that's kind of difficult because there are a lot of organizations out there, and the information, while it's available, isn't as widespread, and the areas that need it the most often try to prevent them from being there. So Utah is a great example because it's a very religious state, is very anti-gay, and there are not a lot of LGBT centers in Utah from my knowledge, and that's kind of the problem is setting up in some of these areas are difficult because you're already fighting the population, so now you have to hire someone to be there, and that person is going to be ostracized in that community because, hey, this is the gay person, but they're not gay, it doesn't matter, they're the gay person. So it becomes kind of an issue for straight people, too. So it's kind of a difficult balancing act.
So you mentioned earlier that you're a part of the Point Foundation?
Yes.
And then that provides scholarships and some financial assistance for students that are in school?
Yes. The Point Foundation is the largest LGBT scholarship organization out there. I got accepted and am now a Point Scholar for their Community College Scholarship, which is a $3,700 scholarship. Their website is pointfoundation.org. I suggest any LGBT students to look it up because they have a community college scholarship, and they have a university scholarship. And they're a lot of money, and they'll help you. They'll help you pay rent, pay for textbooks. So things you need. I would really recommend anyone who's LGBT and needs a scholarship and is needing money to look up into there and try to get accepted into their scholarship program because, you know, money's money, and they're specifically looking for LGBT students, and if you do any sort of activism where you're very involved in the career you do, you can qualify. I got in because I'm very active on campus, but I know other people who were, not saying they weren't active on campus, but they were very involved in, like, nursing or social work or a couple other things. There are a lot of people who do things, and that's what they're looking for, is people who are out there trying to make a difference.
So there are, and then these are specifically to help them, like, get to school and, like,
Pay for tuition, because the university one helps a lot for tuition, because the whole point of that is, like, hey, you don't have enough money to pay your college fees. Well, Point Foundation gives you money that helps pay for your units, because I remember when I was talking to them, they're like, yeah, if you needed money for your your units, like, the amount of units you take, just send us the amount of price index that it costs, and we'll send you back a check that you can mail into the school, and your units will be paid for. You won't have to worry about paying for school for that semester or such.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier that you're married.
Yes.
And then, so you're 23, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so What made you want to get married at this age?
Oh, I really loved my husband. He was adorable, and well, I just like spending time with him. And well, he's from another country, and I don't know. It felt like a good idea to me personally. I enjoy spending time with him. It has financial benefits for the both of us, and citizenship for him is also a benefit, especially with the new administration's clampdown on immigration kind of both scared us a bit. But I love him. I didn't really see a reason why not to. And I had a great wedding. It was like January 21st. So it was like really recent. It also happened during winter session, which I was taking, which because it goes winter session, marriage, winter session again, and then spring. So I've been kind of being run down by all that. But we get along great, and I just wanted to spend the rest of my life with him. I love him. He's a great guy.
So how has the legalization of gay marriages affected the community?
It's made it a lot better, a lot nicer, because being married, you have a lot of benefits. So say if I get health insurance, my husband would be covered by my health insurance. My insurances would cover him. We could file together on taxes. I mean, I think you can do that without being married, but you can now label yourself as married. And generally sharing in benefits, sharing in, like, insurances, it's just beyond the economic part, it's the commitment, it's the fact that you have proof that you're together, that you have confidence, that when you're in the hospital, they can be there by your side and make decisions for you if you're not well. It's reassuring. It's like, I love you, and here's proof that we're together, and nothing can stop that. And it just makes you feel good. And for the longest time, we fought for that right to be able to get married, and it's been a very uphill battle, especially when Prop 8 got introduced and passed, and then the whole Supreme Court battle for it. So I'm just happy it got through, and it really has made the LGB community very happy. The trans community was happy for it too, but it was not as the same of, while it is an achievement for all of us, it was more geared towards same-sex marriage, and if you're not going in for a same-sex marriage, it is a great victory, but it's not your personal victory.
So I know you mentioned it brings a lot of benefits. One of my questions is, have you faced discrimination in the workplace, or like, how should someone that is open with their sexuality and then they have a job, like, handle those situations?
That's the difficult part because, well, it is illegal to discriminate against someone in the workplace. Businesses will find fun and clever ways to fire you. Oh, you just didn't do your job well enough. Code for, I didn't like gays, so you're fired. And I had a couple friends get fired over being gay. Except their boss, of course, didn't have that reason. They had something completely not true, but that's just, it's difficult. It's very difficult because it's just hard. I don't really know how you'd handle that one. Be yourself. Don't try to hide the fact you're gay at the workplace. It's a really tough one because there isn't much you can do. It's the same thing for sexual harassment in the workplace. If you don't have proof, you can't do much with it.
What is one of the common stereotypes that you wish would go away in the community?
All gays are super flamboyant femmy dudes. That is, while that's true at times, not every gay person is that stereotypically gay. You can see some really butch gay guys. So that kind of stereotype, well, there are gay men who are like that, and then they should not feel bad for being like that because that's who you are. Those of us who aren't, like, super femme are like, yeah, we're not all like that flaming, so please don't judge us all like that.
Do you think the flaming, like, gays get, like, the bad rap?
I think they get a bad rap by less flaming gays as well who get mad at them for being so flaming. So they kind of are like, everyone flags them for who they are and judges them on that. So I think they don't have it good either, personally. I think it's just kind of like sucks all the way around scenario.
Yeah, they get it from both sides.
Yeah, they're getting it from their own community and they're getting it from the outside communities, yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to inform us about?
Not really. Just if you are LGBT student listening, I suggest you look into Point Foundation for their scholarships, because that is a good way to further your career. And if you are an LGBT STEM major, you should also look into STEM scholarships, because there are not a lot of LGBT STEM students out there. So I encourage everyone to stay active, stay involved, and keep themselves educated, because you need to have knowledge on your side.
So they have separate grants for LGBT STEM?
No, they do just a general grant, but there are groups out there that do STEM grants. And if you're LGBT, you are a minority group, so you qualify for more.
So that's good to hear that they have different organizations to help.
Yeah, Point is one of the organizations, but not the only.
Okay, well, thank you, Cameron, again for coming on the show. Thank you for listening to The Eavesdrop on KPCRadio.com. I hope to see you next week, and have a wonderful day.